Your man might have the Star Wars Lego set Death Star, but can he chug a sparkling water and not burp? Oh my gosh. What do I do?
Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Monday, July 12th. I'm J.E. Skeets, rolling with the homie there on your screen, Tass Mellis.
What's up, everybody?
What's up, Tass? Got my Top Shot Hot Boy coming at you from... well, the guest bedroom in my house. Yeah, he's like 10 feet away from me. It's Trey Kirby.
Hey, yo.
I could hear that, actually. We got the International Man of Mystery coming to us from Amsterdam, Lee Ellis.
From Amsterdam.
What?
I don't know.
And finally making this magic happen, JD.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Yes, TK is actually here in my house because it's moving day for you, Trey. So no internet setup, no Wi-Fi setup yet at your new place.
Well, I actually might have Wi-Fi at two different places, but there's a whole lot of furniture coming in and out right now, Skeets. I needed to calm down, clear my mind, and scream through a wall at you.
That's awesome. Yeah. And Lee, I'm liking the connection. So far, so good here. What, you're hardwired in, you said?
Yeah, other countries have the internet, as it turns out, which is great. Yeah, okay. Okay. So we'll see how it goes. See what the bill is when I leave this room here. But for now, it's working.
All right. Good stuff, guys. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. Smash that like button. Leave a comment below the vid and subscribe if you haven't already. Keep sending in your questions and comments for the next Beach Steppin' podcast. Email them in nodunks@theathletic.com. We're hitting the beach tomorrow, live at 10 a.m. Eastern back here on YouTube. So you got about 24 hours to give us something good to work with. So send those in, nodunks@theathletic.com. And finally, go grab your No Dunks merch over at nodunks.com if you haven't already. Okay, into game three recap here. Giannis, he exploded for 41 points as the Bucks snatched their first win of the NBA Finals. Their first Finals win since 1974. 120-100 in the Game 3 victory over the Suns. We got ourselves a series, Tass. Where do you want to get started from this pretty dominant Milwaukee win?
Well, let's just start it with Giannis Antetokounmpo, 41-13. 40-10 in consecutive Finals games. Not many have done it. Only MJ and Shaq. That's it. And 40-10, the rebound department, only Shaq has done it. And I think the key for the Bucks is they're finally starting to treat Giannis exclusively like a big man. I mean, just get him in the post, get him in pick and roll situations where it's really hard to cover him. And I think the Bucks are just starting to understand that this is the way we're going to get him going. And you see how much Giannis has improved in the post. He's making really, really quick decisions, and it's not, hey, just come down, you know, Shaq-like, get him in the post and figure it out. They're being smart about it. They have an action on one side, and then you got Giannis with a bunch of duck-ins on the other side, and so he's quick hitting, and Giannis has worked on his footwork in there, and the little push shots, the little semi-hooks, the little dinks and dumps that are happening down there, and then the pick and roll. So it's difficult to guard, but what really, really made the difference in this game, because we know Giannis is steady, it was Middleton and Holiday. They shot 50% combined going home. So Giannis was obviously big, and he got DeAndre Ayton into foul trouble. They said it couldn't be done, but Ayton got into foul trouble, and he went to the bench. He only played 24 minutes in this game, so lots of good stuff on the Bucks side. But I'm just waiting to see how the Suns bounce back. And I think it would have been better for the Bucks if this was a close game down the stretch. It sounds kind of dumb, but I think so many bad things went wrong for the Phoenix Suns that they have a lot to work on. And you know Devin Booker's going to be really, really pissed that he didn't play in the fourth quarter because he had a bad game. He only played 29 minutes. DeAndre Ayton has something to focus on, like stay on the frickin' floor. And the fact that Monty Williams complained about the free throw shooting, get something into the ref's mind. So I think there's a lot to work on for the Suns and a lot to sort of bounce back from. And that's all this is about. You know, you can lose a game in the finals. Absolutely. So how do they bounce back? I think the best recipe, you know, other than Ayton staying on the floor and Booker shooting some more shots, it might be Giannis leaving the game. Like, he did 3 minutes and 30 seconds into
this
one. That
was wild. Was he, like, having a panic attack, in all honesty?
He said he just needed a breather.
Yeah.
That's what he said. He was like, he just felt a little bit...
Too overhyped.
Yeah, yeah. That's basically exactly what he said, because otherwise you must have assumed it was an injury, but they asked him about it post-game, and he was like, yeah, I just felt a little bit gassed, so I needed to come out. He says he's done that a few times throughout the season.
But true.
And he was at the free throw line, too, which was weird. He was at the free throw line and said... I don't know. He just couldn't overcome it, I guess. And then he came back and, you know, whatever. 41-13, 13 of 17 from the line. All good.
Sometimes your computer just freaks out. You got to restart it, and then everything's gravy from there. That's honestly what it felt like from Giannis. That was a dominant, legendary performance. You got to consider him a top five player if you haven't already. All 14 of his baskets were within 5 feet last night. That was incredible. I mean, he obviously took a couple of three-pointers as well. But like Tass is saying, he was getting the ball in the roll, able to score there. He was getting the ball in the post with his back to the basket, able to score there. And then once he'd gotten into his bag, he was able to score on face-ups, even on Jay Crowder. That was really impressive from Giannis. And Ayton missing quite a bit of time with foul trouble. That was a huge difference in this series. The Bucks dominated inside. They were quicker to 50-50 balls. They had more offensive rebounds. They had more three-pointers. This was a dominating victory from the Bucks, and it certainly starts with Giannis just going out there, playing 3 minutes hard, saying, I need to chill a little bit, and then coming back in and playing the next 44 minutes hard as well.
Lee, you stayed up super late. I guess you were helped by jet lag a little bit because you had arrived in Amsterdam, you know, a couple days prior. But I saw you tweeting last night about this game. I'm like, what time is it where you're watching this? It was like 2 or 3 in the morning, if I have it correctly. But what did you take away from this Game 3 victory here for Milwaukee?
Yeah, the rare positive PR for jet lag. It usually people just say curse it out and say how bad it is, but it really actually came into play last night. Well, I watched the game as fresh as anything. It was great. But honestly, I mean, the Bucks, we have seen them. They just tend to start series slowly, and then Budenholzer seems to figure out, you know what, we've got a size advantage here, and it was certainly compacted by the fact that DeAndre Ayton, who started off really well, then did get into foul trouble, because then it is Jay Crowder sort of throwing his body up against Giannis. And, you know, physically, he's okay, but Giannis can understand if he can just backs him down inside and rise up. They got 20 second chance points as well, Milwaukee, last night. They really own that department. And the Suns, I mean, no team really has an answer to sort of stop Giannis, and he has a tremendous advantage up against that front line. You know, Frank the Tank got another handful of minutes there last night, but he cannot stay on the floor to try to guard Giannis. I mean, he's out there basically just to mop up a few minutes when Monty Williams can. But I was really impressed. I thought this was just a solid blueprint for a way that the Bucks can honestly go on to win this series if they continue to play that way. Trey mentioned the points in the paint there. And if you look at Giannis's shot zone, it's all red, but there's a tiny, tiny little bit of green in there, which usually says, you know, maybe the person didn't have a great game. But instead, it just reflected just how dominant Giannis was when he gets into the paint there. Because, you know, he's still not polished as far as that little jump hook. It doesn't always drop in. But the second chance points, that ability to grab his own miss or someone else's miss, or Brook Lopez grabs that miss, just because they're so much bigger than those guys, is really a strong advantage that I think the Bucks have to keep on hammering home. And you saw that one play where Devin Booker's doing his best to box him out. Giannis just sort of reaches over the top of him and throws it back in, gets the and one on it. So, you know, that for me, if you're the Bucks, you look at this game, you know, and they got some great support from Middleton and Drew Holiday as well. But then I thought Bobby Portis, who, you know, barely played in game two, he came out and gave them exactly what they needed. That boost, that energy off the bench, hit some threes. He was really hyping up the crowd and his teammates there. So, you know, this wasn't, I don't just think, one of those wins, you know, where it's like, well, the Phoenix Suns were 2-0 up and they sort of got complacent. I think the Bucks really won this game, and now I just can't wait for game four to see what Milwaukee does, because they didn't get off to a good start. It wasn't really until that you know, halfway through the second quarter there, where they were down six, Budenholzer calls a timeout, and then they went on a run, and Giannis a couple of those, you know, layups in the paint and got them going, and Bobby Portis hit the three as well. So this is a fascinating series. It's still well and truly alive here, and we will maybe see now just how much the Suns, you know, do miss having a second big, because Torrey Craig played. He's kind of their fill-in replacement for Dario Saric, who's obviously out. But, you know, a lot of things here for the Bucks. If you take away from this game, you think, you know, this series is definitely alive.
Yeah, Drew Holiday was huge in that third quarter, because it was a four-point game. I mean, the Suns sort of, you know, the Bucks had gone on that massive run there in the second quarter. It was like a 20-6 run. They're up 8. There's a timeout. And then there was like, I thought it was like a really key, like 3.5 minutes before the end of the first half. And the Bucks were awesome. You had Booker missing jumpers. You had Payne, though, cutting it to 5 because he had that and one layup. But then the Bucks sort of answered. And that was big. And a huge foul on Ayton. And it wasn't Giannis. It was actually Middleton who drew that foul right at the end of the first half, which came into play, of course, when Ayton picked up a couple of early ones in the third quarter. But back to Jrue Holiday. Close game, but he had an answer task every time. He was huge. Like, he had 4 3-pointers, I think, in that third quarter, and it felt like everyone was massive just to keep the Suns sort of at bay and keep the Bucks in control. He had 21 points, 9 assists, and 5 boards, and played incredible defense. That's the perfect Jrue Holiday game, I think is fair to say. What he gave him defensively and then chipping in, especially hitting threes, I thought he was pretty instrumental. Giannis gets all the headlines, rightfully so, but, you know, Jrue and Middleton hitting enough shots there early. That's all Giannis needed in game 2. That's what we said. He was awesome. Who's going to help him? Somebody's got to help him. And he got a lot of help, I thought, in game 3.
Yeah, what a difference a game makes. He just didn't hesitate, and those threes were going down. And even the layups, he just looked like a different player laying up a basketball, which sounds really stupid to say. This is an NBA player. He should have no problem shooting layups, but he wasn't short-arming shots like he was earlier in the series. He just felt a lot better, and he looked a lot better. And that's the scary part for the Suns, is that the Bucks tend to get better as the series goes on, and it's not just Giannis Antetokounmpo, who is, you know, extremely scary. Bent knee, had a good game in game 1, an incredible game 2, and a great game in game 3. That's the scary part, because Giannis hasn't had to carry this team for 2 months like, you know, a number one superstar usually does. He had a poor series against the Miami Heat in series number 1, bounced back against the Brooklyn Nets. Then he missed a couple games against the Hawks with the injury. And now, you know, it's almost like he's got a little bit of freshness going to him. And he's a little bit like LeBron to me in that starts the series slow and then, you know, starts to pick it up. So if the Bucks follow his lead, like Jrue Holiday, as you mentioned, Skeets, and Chris Middleton, hopefully, who hasn't had a monster game yet in this series, that's the scary part for the Suns. But I expect the Suns to bounce back, and the Bucks, even though the Suns don't have a backup big, if Ayton gets into foul trouble, it's happened once now. The Bucks are still thin. And I thought some of those, you know, Bobby Portis shots were a little bit nuts that he was taking. He came in and fired 11 shots in 18 minutes. But you need that if you're the Milwaukee Bucks. Mm-hmm. And you need Jrue Holiday to shoot because you're not deep. And so, there was a nice recipe for sure. Jrue and Giannis hitting free throws like he's freaking Steph Antetokounmpo out there, as they said on the broadcast, although it was shot down on the broadcast.
Mark Jackson not happy.
Yeah. No, sir. Don't
he
do
said,
that.
Don't even call him.
Like, what does that mean? I didn't get that part.
Sonus. Sonus.
Giannis.
Hold on. You're going to live, Lee. You're going to live with 13 of 17 at the line for Giannis any day of the week. I mean, and he's gotten better and better as the finals has gone on here. I know we're only 3 games in, but he's improved every game at the free throw line.
And I think they mentioned it on the broadcast last night. He's definitely taking less time.
He's sped it up a little bit.
Yeah. But the most important thing for me is it's not in his head like it was in Ben Simmons' head. He's not afraid to go in there. He knows he's going to get hit. He knows they're going to try to wrap him up, so he's going to be taking a lot of these free throws. I think he hit 8 in a row last night at one point there until Mike Breen sort of cursed him because he kept saying, he's like, 5 in a row, 6 in a row, 7 in a row.
Right.
But at that point, the game was pretty much, I think, in the Bucks' control anyway. But that to me is, mentally sending a message to the Suns. It's like, we know he's not a great free throw shooter, but he's not going to avoid contact. He's not going to avoid the paint. If you foul him, he's going to the line, and he still goes through that little routine where he does the imaginary one first, which is fine, but I just think it is better that he's growing more confident in the way that he shoots it. And 13 for 17 is fantastic. And he earlier in the mid-range and the three-point shots, we can debate those all we want, but when he goes into the paint like that, he's just such a more effective, dominant player because he's got height advantage, he's got the length advantage, he's got the athleticism advantage. The Suns will still live if he's going to take those mid-ranges, even if he knocks in a couple, and of course the threes as well, but he's sort of put those away and he's gone someone inside to become, you know, like you compared him to LeBron. We know he's not like Michael. He's not like LeBron. He's certainly not like Shaq. But at the same time, he's got a little bit of everyone in that game because he's, you know, he's in there and he's pounding away, and that's the way to do it. There was a couple other times
you were tweeting
as well.
About you were in love with the bully ball.
To me is just when he's at his best, because as I say, Crowder, he can push him and push him and push him, but like Shaq, if you just take an inch at a time, you go inside, and then you by the time you turn around, you're under the basket.
Yeah, you've got to either foul him or...
Exactly.
Yeah,
there's
score,
no
yeah.
rim protection whatsoever there. So, you know, and you see him a couple of times. He wants that little mid-ranger, but he's able to sort of be disciplined enough to be like, no, I've got to get inside and make those shots. And I think that was just so important. I mean, I think that sends a message to the Suns. It's like, I'm doing this no matter who's defending me, no matter who's guarding me. And, you know, an impressive victory started with their superstar. And also, the other point I wanted to make is the way that sometimes they move the ball around as well and got him sort of cutting inside to the paint. And you saw other players do that as well. I think that sort of thing becomes contagious. PJ Tucker sort of zigzagged in, gave it to Drew, then cut back and got a beautiful layup out of it. So when that ball moves around like that, it becomes infectious to everybody. And also, Pat Connaughton had 4 threes in game 2, and we're like, he was their second best player. Last night he had 8 points, hit 2 threes in 30 minutes, and that to me is more, that's what you need, just that sort of little extra help. You don't need Pat Connaughton to be like, we need this guy to be huge for us. He just needs to go out there and you know, be the icing on the cake.
The Bucks role players played fairly well in game 1. They took a loss because Giannis wasn't 100% at that point. He was still figuring out his body. In game 2, Giannis was back to Giannis. He put up his first 40-10 in the finals, but the role players let him down. The Bucks got both in game 3 last night. And that's really the difference, you know. It's great if somebody's going for 40-10 every night, but you have to have the support players, whether that be three-pointers from Bobby Portis and Pat Connaughton, or Drew Holiday getting hot, hitting 5 threes. I thought he, just like you're saying, Skeets, he was massive in that third quarter. This would easily be 2-1 for the Bucks if they had been able to put the games together like they did in game 3.
Yeah, what did you think, Tass? A couple of things. One, with the free throw disparity, you know, Monty Williams sort of, he brought it up, though he said he wasn't really talking about it, how Giannis took so many free throws compared to the Suns overall. And then Monty sort of waving the white flag. One of you threw it in there, like, I guess it was you, Tass, like saying Booker not playing the fourth quarter. You know, it was like a 20-point game, but that really is nothing in today's game with like 10 minutes to go. And he sort of was like, I don't know, he sort of threw the white towel in, is what I'm trying to say, or waved the white flag. So
they're both white.
It's the same thing. You can also throw the white flag if you want to. I guess that'd be really weird. But that's what he did. So what do you make of that? Both of those things, the free throw disparity, is there anything to that? And then sort of Monty saying, you know what? Okay, let's just look ahead to game 4. What do you think?
Listen, the Bucks won this game, free throw disparity or not. And I think Monty Williams he's just playing the refs a little bit just to make them aware that Ayton shouldn't get all those foul calls against him. I think it's just about DeAndre Ayton. And the fourth one that sent him to the bench, a little softy, no doubt. But I think he could have brought him back earlier. He could have brought DeAndre Ayton back earlier. Yeah. He didn't need to sit the rest of the fourth like that. Play him with 4 fouls. He is he's a very competent guy. They brought it back, even though, you know, it's easy to say, they got Ayton out of the game. Backup center came in. They won this game that way. Well, actually, when Ayton went down, they scored. They were up plus 5, you know, the next several minutes. Mm-hmm. They got back into the game. At the end of the quarter, with Ayton still on the bench, probably should have been out there. Yeah, they expanded the lead. So this free throw thing wasn't a problem in game 2, well, when they won. Monty Williams didn't go up there and say, hey, Giannis shot, what did he shoot, 18 free throws in that game? You know, he shot a similar amount of free throws. That wasn't the problem then, right? Mm-hmm. So it wasn't the issue. Bucks just hammered. As far as the Devin Booker thing in the fourth quarter, I'm going to give Monty Williams the benefit of the doubt that he knows his guy. Maybe he sits the fourth. He knows that if you sit him the fourth, he'll be thinking about it. He'll be, you know, ready to fix things in game number 4. So that's all I can take from it. I mean, yeah, he could have been out there, you know, minus 20, down 20, but he was obviously having a bad game. He started, game 2 pretty poorly as well, right? He started 2 of 10 in game 2 and bounced back. So I think we'll just say that Monty knows his guy. But the Ayton thing, play your guy. Play him a little bit more. I mean, I didn't really get sitting him for so many minutes in that third quarter because – yeah, I mean, Giannis is bigger than everybody else, but at the same time, I mean, the Bucks were just running such good actions. This wasn't this wasn't Shaq. Give him the ball.
No.
You know, it's we got to give a little.
They were using Giannis as the screener, which is brilliant. Yeah. I mean, they did it with Middleton as the ball handler, Drew as the ball handler, Pat Connaughton that time. He's even that. You know, they would just always. That's great. Put Giannis in the action. He's a giant dude. He can set a screen and then he can roll. And my God, if you got guys that can play make and get him the ball in movement, well, then it's just the next level. It's a lot easier than, like you said, like where you just put him on the block and like now all eyes are on him. Now we can keep an eye on where everybody is. It's like you can't do that when there's movement like that. That's why it's got to be scary a little bit for the Suns moving forward here. It's like, how are they going to counter that? One, yeah, Ayton's got to stay on the floor, but you also got to defend it a lot better.
Yeah, and I think just going back to years past, though, they used to just put Giannis on the block, you know, like come down and give it to him. But I think Giannis was doing had a lot more duck-ins, you know, besides the pick and roll. It was a lot more action where he got the ball quickly. And, you know, we used to see the Raptors smother him or him just drive in, and get smothered. Now, I think everything was... Yeah, there was a couple seconds of free space for him to make a decision, and he's gotten a lot better at that. Bud's got to get credit for getting him, you know, into the post a little bit quicker. And the pick and rolls. I mean, I put it out on Twitter asking, you know, the second spectrum people, figure this thing out. How many pick and rolls was he in? Because I counted two in game one, and maybe they're just trying to figure it out. I don't think I counted in game two, but in game three, it must have been like a billion. I mean, he definitely was.
Especially in the first half.
Yeah, he was rolling, and then he's in such a rhythm. To see him at the free throw line like that, it reminds me of when Trey put together Lee's draft card, and you know, he's got that free throw form. I think of Giannis, when Giannis does his fake one, I think of this every single time. If you're watching on YouTube,
like that.
Yeah, he's got that form going. He's ready to be George Mikan out there. But
guy's been compared to Steph Curry, Michael Jordan, Shaquille O'Neal, and now the highest compliment,
Lee Ellis
at the free throw line. I would be a little worried if I'm Giannis in game four, because post game, not only did Monty Williams kind of call out the fact that he shot a lot more free throws than the rest of the Suns team did, he also mentioned that he's going to show DeAndre Ayton some places to take charges. So the flops are going to be out big time in game four. I would say Giannis needs to have the secondary move, the dinkers and the dumpers ready, because they are just going to be falling over in the lane. They're going to be saying, hey, man. Yeah, exactly right. It's either going to be we get you in foul trouble by taking these flailing flop charges, or you're going to the free throw line, which Giannis shot the ball incredibly well at the line yesterday, but you're still taking your chances there. He's like 100% when he's dunking, I saw. So
that's his percentage?
Lower percentage. Yeah. He's good at dunks.
Maybe I'm forgetting one that happened in game two, but the Euro step is back for Giannis, so that's an encouraging sign for Bucks fans for sure. He dropped like three or four of them, it felt like, last night, Lee, and I couldn't remember them, and definitely not in game one. You know, we were talking about it. We're like, ooh, you know, that's a lot of pressure on that hyperextended knee. Mm-hmm. I can't remember many in game two if they happen or not, but anyway, my point is he's looking more and more comfortable physically because he dropped it like two or three times at least last night.
Yeah, there's one great one around Frank the Tank where he's sort of trying to pick up the charge at the top of the key there, and Giannis just like, he just blows by him. And, you know, again, Frank knows that he's out there and it's sort of like hang on for dear life minutes, but that will certainly help Giannis' confidence. But again, like considering what happened to this guy's knee a few weeks ago, for him to be able to move side to side like that, you know, because that's often what players talk about is, you know, when you're coming back, if you can go sort of in a straight line versus if you can sort of power off both legs. And he seems to be able to doing that, to be able to do that now without any problems at all. So that's incredible. But yeah, I mean, give him the ball in transition as well. And he seems to have a little bit more patience now as well. Like, you know, he has in the past picked up offensive fouls by just sort of barreling toward the rim. But now he understands guys are setting the trap, waiting for that to happen. So he has to be a bit more careful with it. But yes, man, encouraging stuff from Milwaukee. I'm just glad for them because, honestly, that first quarter, they were down. And I was like, where is that game three, you know, sense of urgency? Where's that spark? Because I didn't really see it there. And then they sort of, you know, the end of that second quarter, they really put their foot down. I was like, okay, finally, it's here. It took them a while to get going there. But, that first quarter, I was a bit worried there for the Buckies.
Well, it got a little dicey, too, because I think the pick and roll action with Giannis was killing them. So they were like, Monty Williams like, well, let's go zone. Let's throw a zone at them, see what they do. And it was working for a little bit. The Bucks were like, what always seems to happen in an NBA game when a team goes zone, the other team's like, well, let's just shoot threes. They're open. Let's just let them fly. And it was like, oh, you're falling right into their trap. And they weren't hitting them. And then I think there was a timeout and they're like, no, let's we got the biggest dudes on this team. We can find the seams in the zone and punish them. And they did. And, you know, that didn't last all that long. I don't think, well, maybe we will see a little bit more zone again. They mix it up, Monty Williams with his calls. But I thought that was, it was at least nice to see Budenholzer and the Bucks say, okay, we're taking some dumb shots that they want us to take. We're rushing here. Let's pound the hell out of them inside. And they did. They killed them. And you guys have said these stats, but they were the more physical team because they killed them in the paint, killed them on the offensive glass, 13 offensive rebounds compared to just 6 for Phoenix. Now, a big part of that is no Ayton out there for half the game. And in turn, outscored the Suns 20-2 in second chance points. That's just massive, along with the free throw disparity, or at least getting there more, and like attacking. That's the recipe for the win there, Tass. But any other observations from this game? Any unsung heroes we haven't talked about? And then, of course, looking forward to Game 4 on Wednesday. Where do you want to go?
Well, the Cam Johnson dunk was... we're going to remember that one for a while. And I like on the broadcast as well, actually. I mean, you know, Van Gundy and Mark Jackson aren't my favorite, but they were basically saying... You can't review that. Even if it was a charge, we're not calling that. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, they didn't, because you've definitely seen that call. But not just the dunk that was massive, but the PJ Tucker meme reaction. That one will live on forever, too.
That's so good. Yeah. It was so, so good. Scott Foster, we didn't say this, was on the call. Chris Paul does not have a great record against Scott Foster. But I don't feel like Foster really inserted himself into this game. I think the Suns are actually maybe more upset with the other officials with some of the calls that Ayton was picking up specifically. But am I wrong, Tass? Foster really didn't play a part, which is good.
I guess. I don't know. I wasn't trying. I didn't track. I don't know any
he was counting
any
screens.
Refereeing business. Yeah, I was counting screens. No,
you were busy. Fouls,
I wish I was counting them harder. But yeah, I had no... No referee business, thankfully. You know,
yeah.
I was counting free throws, though. I was counting Giannis free throws. Up to 66% on the series. Solid. Solid. 60%.
What? Yeah, 60% what, is he, in the, what is he in the playoffs? They had this. I think it's like he's up to 60% on the first ones in the playoffs and 73 on second ones or something like that, I think I saw.
I think that's a TAS tweet I saw going around.
Oh, is that? Is it?
Yeah, that was just...
But is that only the finals?
Just the finals, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think any sicko has tracked it throughout the entire playoffs. what is this man shooting through free throws this postseason? Just 57%. Picking it up in the finals, no doubt.
He's just like Shaq. Wasn't that what Shaq always says?
Yeah. Makes him when he needs to.
When he needs to. Well, he made him last night. Yeah, that was good. What do you got, Trey? Any other notes from this game or the extracurricular stuff around this game?
Well, like Lee's saying, the Cam Johnson dunk was awesome. I would have liked to see ESPN roll the Tom Chambers dunk with Jackson sitting there on the broadcast, the perfect guy to ask about this. He probably would have been arguing for a charge if they would have rolled that back, I have to think. Also, I think Cam Johnson has got to be the backup center for the Suns because we've talked about the Frank minutes. They weren't great. I was happy to see my guy get a shot up. Also had a massive slam dunk. Getting the ball this much over the rim on his slam dunk. Just the fingertips for fingertips Frank on the dunk. And got to give a shout out to the Chuggers out there in Milwaukee. Tass, I know you said on the fan cam they weren't chugging quite as hard, but they did have a lot of chugs going on apparently on the Jumbotron. The Packers' David Bakhtiari was there.
Yep.
To me, seeing the clip, didn't look like he even necessarily wanted to chug these beers, but they're like,
yeah, I don't think so.
Come on, guy, you're the chugger. Start chugging. He hits two, hits you with the let's goes, and then brought out his dad to chug another beer. He chugs it, hits the whole stadium with some let's goes, as you have to do. And then apparently, Chris Herring at Sports Illustrated said they put a kid on the Jumbotron who chugged his apple juice and then hit the stadium with a bunch of let's goes. These people are true sickos there. I love it.
Yeah, it was a pretty good one, though. The kid was pretty good. It's on Bleacher Report's Instagram. I wouldn't know. I don't think it was an apple juice. It seemed like there was a color to it, but that kid was bringing it, man. chest pounding. Yeah, it was pretty solid. I mean, how can you not when you see all these other chuggers in Milwaukee? I mean, great examples in Milwaukee for this youngster.
Lee, could you chug an apple juice?
Interesting. I've never tried. I was never, ever, ever good, though, at chugging like a soft drink. You know, that used to be a thing when you're a teenager. I could never do it. It's just too gassy. Yeah. I get like, you know, two gulps in and
suddenly
I'm just like...
hitting your head off the garage door.
Yeah, I am. I'm that guy. And I've never really been a good beer chugger either. So probably not is the answer to that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Do you have any other notes from this game?
No, I just want to go back quickly to the Monty Williams. You know, I don't want to make this a free throw thing. I don't want to call out the referees. and he technically didn't, because he didn't even say Giannis's name.
No,
he wouldn't say it, you know, but their guy or that guy or something he said like that. But imagine you're the NBA head office, you know, because it was suggested that the Bucks are going to be sending tapes after game one and two. Chris Middleton not getting free throws. Now game three, the Suns are sending in tapes. Hey, this guy's getting too many free throws. So if you're Adam Silver, you're like, what are we doing? I mean, they're sending videotapes. They're going to take a few days to get there. Game four is going to be on before they even arrive in the head office there. So, but no, Monty Williams, look, you know, he's a great guy. He always speaks really well. But think he was just... that was more just an expression of frustration that they lost. I don't think there was anything he really had to complain about, because when you're that big, you're that close to the paint, you keep going up, you're going to get the foul calls. And people are trying to make the connection between Scott Foster for this game, but that's just a reach at this point. He did nothing to influence the game. Bucks were just better.
Finals MVP rankings. Trey, I've always gone to you for this. Let's go back to you. Has Giannis catapulted his way up to number one despite trailing the series? I mean, the guy just did something that only Shaq has ever done in the finals. Or does Chris Paul stay at one? Like, where? Hit me with the top three at least.
There ain't a top three. There's a top two at this point, okay. Skeets. Okay. And actually, there's a top one, a 1A and a 1B. It's still Chris Paul for me in the lead for finals MVP, simply because the Suns are in the lead in this series. Giannis, like you're saying, is doing finals MVP stuff. Shaq and Michael Jordan are his comparisons, and of course Lee Ellis at the free throw line. So he's got to be on the power rankings, but I think after two subpar games, Devin Booker has dropped out of the race. So right now, whoever wins, if the Suns win it, I got Chris Paul as the MVP. If the Bucks win it, it's Giannis.
Yeah, I think that's fair. We pointed out a Booker really, really bad game. I mean, what did he end up with, like 10 points, 3 of 14 shooting in about 30 minutes. Couldn't find a rhythm all game. Some credit's got to go to the Bucks defense on him. I assume he bounces back. But Chris Paul also had one of the, like, he just had a very quiet game, I thought, too, Tass. Like, we just now mentioned him here in the finals MVP power rankings. Like, his final box score's fine, but, like, he just didn't really, he hit a couple jumpers early. I think he went 3 for 4 to, like, start the game, and you're like, uh-oh, he's finding his spots. And then that was sort of it. I just don't remember hearing much from him for the rest of the game.
Yeah. He did a good job getting DeAndre Ayton involved early. Ayton was crushing it early.
Yeah.
So CP was running the show really, really well, though he turned it over 4 times. That ain't CP, but he's done that a couple times recently. Yeah, he wasn't himself. You know, the whole thing was thrown off with Book getting frustrated and Ayton foul trouble. And yeah, totally. I mean, you know, campaign helped out for sure when CP went to the bench, but yeah, you can't really point to anybody saying that the Suns had you know, a really, really good game. Which
I guess
Sun
Crowder
had a
was
really
good.
Good game.
Had a bunch of threes.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
that's
and then other everybody else sort of didn't play up to their level that we've seen throughout the postseason for sure. I got one more point from this game because it was a big talking point in our WhatsApp chat with the guys. How do you feel about the Bucks and Six chant? When you're down 2-0 in the series, Lee, do you respect the hell out of that? Leaning into the Brandon Jennings meme, or, you know, is it just the case of a lot of the guys are like, come on, just get one? Though people are pointing out that's not a great chant.
Just get one. Don't get swept. Don't get swept. Well, mathematically, it's still in play. So while it's still in that situation, if you're a Bucks fan, because everyone wants that because of the Brandon Jennings from, 10 years ago, I suppose it was now, and I can't even remember.
A long time.
So that's what they're going to hang their hat on. If they do somehow pull this off in six, it'll just be a masterful chant that will be remembered forever. But I mean, why not? They can still do it.
Maybe it might be amplified a little bit too, because we've had the Suns in four guy.
Right.
Totally.
And the Suns in four chant, which was in play, of course, until the end of last night. Maybe that's why Bucks fans are leaning into the Bucks in six. I didn't have a problem with it in the WhatsApp chat, but some guys were furious.
Who's upset at that?
Jesus. You want me to name names? Who do you think was upset? Take a guess.
Not Greer. She's not upset at that, is he?
Oh, yes. Scrabble.
Why? Why? What's
upset.
He upset
I
at?
Think my buddy Ken was upset about this too. Yeah.
Oh, man. Who well, knows, hey, listen. Man. Speaking of Devin Booker, I think he's dropped to 1-2 in pregame fits. I did not like what he had on yesterday. Oh, I mean,
here we go.
Come on, that wasn't stylish. He looked like a kid going to the first day of school, and his parents were like, he's going to have a growth spurt this year, so we have to buy him the clothes that are slightly bigger than he needs right now. That's what it looked like to me.
Somebody get this clip in front of Devin Booker. He's already pissed off. He had a bad game three. Now Ellis is back talking about his fashion sense.
Hey, look, most of those players are pretty stylish and fashionable, but not everyone's batting 1,000 when it comes to fashion. And I think I think Devin's just I think he's struggling. I think those last two games, the Colonel versus Anders look, and then the school kid outfit.
Guy not goes to it. Europe once, suddenly.
I know.
Yeah, you're wearing his son's Western Conference Finals shirt. Yeah. Look at this guy.
Yeah, thanks to Espo, Greg Esposito out in Phoenix for this one, because we talked about on the show, I said, these shirts are redundant no matter what happens after the finals here. You know? And then
so
I
let
said,
me get one.
Yeah, exactly. I said, Espo, if you find one, can you let me know and send it over? And he said the last one. It's great. He sent it over. So I'm going to still wear this while it is relevant. We've got at least, until Friday, I think, is game five. So at minimum.
Saturday,
is it? Yeah. So minimum there. I've got a few more days to wear this one around. So.
That's a pretty solid shirt, actually, for a Western Conference championship.
Yeah, he didn't show you the bottom of it, though. It says literally, this is a weird part to me, it says 3-time conference champions. I could do
that is
that
a weird brag.
Yeah.
I think that makes it even better. Better.
Maybe. Yeah, we've got a question coming up on our Beach Seppin episode tomorrow, Tuesday, about that, about the people who wear conference champion shirt. Maybe Devin Booker should have worn that coming into the arena, and he would have been cool. And talk about Brandon Jennings. Yeah, Suns in four guy, I get it. So why not get Brandon Jennings in the building?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Is he available? Wow. I don't know. Bring him in.
Okay,
get him sitting beside Chance the Rapper, because he's sitting front court.
Yeah.
There's a chance, the rapper, that this could be a Bucks and six. Get him
Cheryl,
beside that dude.
I didn't see Cheryl there last night.
One name
like,
basis
Cheryl who? Oh, Cheryl Crow, our good friend.
Yeah.
Maybe I didn't see her either. Like, what's going on? She might be a fake fan for all I know.
Fair with her. She couldn't get the standing room only, so she was like, I'm not going.
Yeah. We're excited, obviously, for game four. It feels like it could be the swing game of a series when it's 2-1 and, you know, the Bucks tie it and we got a best of three, or Suns win it and it's like, oh, they have home court advantage and they only need one. Would be very difficult, I think we would agree, for the Bucks comeback. So a huge game there. It's not till Wednesday. There is this big gap. I heard Windhorst saying it might have had something to do with the MLB All-Star game. I don't know if that's true, because it feels like they always have this weird sort of schedule, so who knows. But game four Wednesday night, and then game five, you guys said it, on Saturday night, which is a little bit of a wild card, but that's okay. I think we're planning on doing a Sunday morning show to recap that game five. You know, who knows if that will be the Suns winning the championship, or will it just be an awesome game five and somebody taking a 3-2 series lead? But that's the plan right now. And again, tomorrow we will hit the beach. So get your questions in. NoDunks@TheAthletic.com. Okay, let's take a break. We got to get to a bit of a shocker when it comes to Team USA and a little other NBA news. But we'll be back in a second. All right, back with No Dunks. Had a bit of a shocker over the weekend. The U.S. fell in its first pre-Olympic exhibition game to Nigeria, 90-87 Saturday night in Vegas. Upset was Team USA's first loss to an African nation in team history. So we got to go to our American here on the show. Trey, on a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you and really Team USA about this loss to Nigeria?
I'm at a 6 right now.
Whoa.
Is that high? Is that high?
A little bit higher, yeah.
Yeah, I feel a little more concerned than I should. Like I've told you before, I don't watch or really care about the games that don't count. I'm also not surprised at a weird result in Las Vegas. Weird things happen there. But the 2019 World Cup taught me three things. Number one, most important, the U.S. isn't so far ahead that they can just send any team out there and roll the rest of the world. And the 2021 team, I think, is definitely better than the 2019 team. Three guys that are going to be playing for Team USA were playing in the finals last night, so they're not there. But other teams, including Nigeria, have NBA talent, and basketball in general is just better at this point. Number two, When the U.S. loses a friendly, you got to be a little bit concerned because Australia beat the U.S. in 2019. I remember thinking, who cares? Who cares? This game doesn't mean anything. Next thing you know, they're losing in the FIBA World Cup, not just once, but twice. People are catching up. The USA beat Nigeria by 83 in 2012, by 44 in 2016, and then obviously they lost the exhibition game over the weekend. The third takeaway, maybe Greg Popovich is cursed.
Uh-oh.
He was on the bench for the 2004 Olympics, the lowest moment in USA basketball history. He sent home Bam Adebayo and De'Aaron Fox to keep Mason Plumlee and Derek White for the 2019 FIBA World Cup. They lost, and then he lost again last night. I'm not saying it's Greg Popovich's fault. I'm just saying he happens to be around for a lot of the losses for Team USA basketball here in the past two decades. The best thing that could happen for the U.S. here is to take this as a wake-up call saying, hey, we got to play actual basketball every single time we go out on the court if we want to get a gold medal.
Yeah, this is a rare loss for Team USA. Only their third in 57 exhibition games since 92. And the last time, though, was against your Australians there, Lee, back in 19 when it comes to exhibition games. But yeah, is this concerning at all, or is this like good in a weird way? Happens now. Holy crap. We got to get our shit together here. You know, they barely play, too, together. I will say that. Though the same, I think, can be said for Nigeria. So you got to work some kinks out. But what do you think, Lili?
Well, I think that the Team USA, the thing is, there's no friendly games with them. Every time any team's going up against the USA, it's like a barometer to be like, we want to just get a win against the USA, even if this doesn't count in any other official sort of standings as far as the Olympics are concerned. So every team they go up against is giving it their best shot. And I really just do think it does highlight the sort of lack of consistency and chemistry that these guys have had to be able to play together. Because Kevin Durant's out on the court, Damian Lillard's out on the court, Tatum, Beal, all those guys play. This is not the 2019 team where it was, you know, Brook Lopez was there big and a young Donovan Mitchell was on that team. And, you know, Kemba Walker, who's a good player, but he's certainly not Damian Lillard or Kevin Durant. Yeah. And every team just is right now going like, you know, this is not the dream team, or even those first five or six versions of the dream team where it was like, you just feel that the US has a 20-point head start. Right now, teams are like, we can compete with these guys, and Nigeria is just the latest example of a team to do that. So I still look at the US go in as heavy favorites still to Tokyo. Maybe they don't sweep the whole tournament, but certainly, you know, they don't have that aura of invincibility that they used to have. And it's just great for basketball. It shows that world basketball is on the rise, and Team USA can still roll out a great team no matter who plays. But they always have to bring their best because the other team is going to take any chance they can to just get a victory. It doesn't matter what the circumstances are. A win against Team USA in basketball is huge for any country's basketball program.
Yeah, Nigeria came into this game 28.5 point underdogs.
Wow.
Yeah, which is wild. But there are not a bunch of who are these guys tasked. I mean, there was 8 NBA players on the roster. Like, people, you know, maybe not the casual fan knows, but diehard NBA fans know. Achiuwa, Metu, Okoji, Nwora, Okafor, Jahlil Okafor on this team, and others. I mean, this was a good start. Coached by Mike Brown, too. So, like, there's some talent out there. That all said, Team USA should still beat them. But it was one of those games where Nigeria hit, like, 20 threes. They shot nearly 50% from distance and caught them by surprise. But are you concerned at all about Team USA moving into the Olympics here?
Concerned isn't the right word. I don't think they were really trying in this game for a game where, you know, this was Nigeria's you know, big game for their finals or whatever you want to call it. This was a big game for them. You can see a lot of chemistry, I think, if you watch some of the plays that Nigeria has. They do have three members of the Miami Heat on their team, with Precious Achiuwa, Gabe Vincent, and Kezi Okpala. And a great photo of those three guys taking a photo with Bam Adebayo, who's obviously their Miami Heat teammate, and Damian Lillard looking back like, what the hell are you doing, man? You're taking a photo with the other team? And then Precious Achiuwa, speaking of Precious, first of all, he's got a great Instagram handle. At Precious. And nice. After the game,
big shouts, Gollum.
he blocked Kevin Durant in the game.
It's huge.
Huge, huge block. And then on Instagram, he put up a photo with the caption of him blocking Kevin Durant. The caption is, "You're not that guy, pal. Trust me, you're not that guy." The problem is, he took it down. Ooh. I don't know why. I mean, it's I don't know. Just do it. I mean, just do it. This was it was a great photo. Big caption there going right at Kevin Durant. You're not that guy, pal. Trust me, you're not that guy. It reminded me sort of the Memphis Grizzlies and their attitude when Andre Iguodala sat out the beginning of the season after being a champion for several years, and he sat out and got traded away to the Miami Heat. And the Grizzlies said, screw that guy. You don't want to be a part of us, and screw off. You know, that attitude that, hey, we're better than everybody thinks we are. And kudos to Mike Brown and the entire team putting it together. And all international teams, although it's mostly NBA players, are generally going to have more camaraderie than the American team because they are going to have guys that have played together a little bit more, just even if it's not in the NBA circles. You got three members of the Miami Heat here. So I think coming into these exhibition games, if there is a time where these other guys have an upper hand, then it is this point in time. So I'm not worried, but the gap has closed. Three times in the last 57 exhibition games. It's happening more frequently, as we've seen these last two with Australia and Nigeria. I think these guys are, this isn't 2004. These guys aren't going to take it lightly by any means. I think they've learned. So as Popovich said, it's probably a good sign, a good little thing to get it out of the way.
You're not that guy, pal. That's a meme. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Just looked it up. Yeah.
Really?
I saw it in quotes there. I'm like, that he must be referencing something.
Is it funny.
Lyrics? Is it a meme? Yeah. It's Trey, of the meme, the viral video?
Yeah. He's got a bit of a Lee Ellis look to him, if I'm being quite honest. An angry man in a store, of course. And I just went and checked Precious's Instagram. It looks like the picture is still up, but now it's part of a carousel slideshow.
Oh, that's my mistake. Yeah. That's my mistake.
Yeah, I did notice in the original post he had YOUR. Now it's YOU_RE.
Nice.
So maybe he just wanted to update his his typographical error there because he's getting a lot of heat on this on this Instagram. You don't want to be a fool, right, Skeets? You hate that. That's you're getting great engagement. You notice a typo there. Luckily, though, Instagram lets you change things, so you don't look like a total fool.
Exactly. If that's Twitter, he's got to make the decision.
Yeah.
Can he sleep at night, or does he take it down, even though it's got great engagement, and just do it again with the correct spelling? Do you throw that in Grammarly, see what it pumps out at you? I don't know. Good win from Team Nigeria there. And, Mike Brown getting a little revenge from the 07 finals. I saw people pointing out.
He's been waiting.
Popovich. Yeah. And he struck at the perfect time, if you ask me. All right. Other little piece of news here. We'll go to the headline from Real GM. Wolves plan on pursuing trade for Ben Simmons. Yeah. If Ben Simmons becomes available in trade talks, sources tell The Athletic that the Minnesota Timberwolves will enter the bidding. On a scale of 1 to 10, Lili, how likely is a Wolves-Sixers-Ben Simmons trade in your mind?
Based on the reporting, only around about a 2 to me. I don't think it's happening because the Wolves... Now, again, this is Danny LaRue and John Krasinski here from The Athletic sort of saying what it would take. They're saying, Malik Beasley and a Ricky Rubio to get the sort of salaries close there and perhaps someone else. But if you're the Philadelphia 76ers, you are going to expect a whole lot more in return for Ben Simmons. This is not just a let's make the salaries work deal. Now, let's say in theory Daryl Morey loses his mind and says, okay, I do that deal. Then yes, I think the Minnesota Timberwolves would be a decent spot for him there on that team where, he's got Karl Anthony Towns. Anthony Edwards has been shown that he can be a very good player if he can work on that three-point shot. I don't quite know how it fits there with D'Angelo Russell. Maybe he gets traded back. But Ben Simmons is still a very good player. He can still impact teams in a variety of ways. And there's going to be no shortage of teams out there interested in the services, but it's going to take a significant package still to pry him away from the Philadelphia 76ers. And I don't think based on this, they're sort of more just hypothetically speaking there anyway, I don't think that would get it done from the Timberwolves.
Yeah, the interesting part I thought from the guys at The Athletic was saying that they, even if they were to make this move for Ben Simmons, they have plans that D'Angelo Russell is still involved with this squad moving forward. Because when I was proposing this trade, if you remember when I was going through like the 10 to 12 Ben Simmons trades with every team in the league, I figured Russell would be going back. Monetary reasons, make the contracts work. But also, like you just said, Lee, Ben Simmons would come in there, maybe take that role a little bit more. And you could see the Sixers, now maybe it's still not enough, but like a little more intrigue in a shooter like Russell, a guy that could take over in a fourth quarter, stuff like that. But yeah, they are saying no, like that's not the case. And maybe it would be something more like a Rubio and Beasley. So that was intriguing to me. I still think this makes a lot of sense for both teams. I think there's something here. And of course, the relationship between the former GMs helps. That always helps. They feel a little more comfortable working with each other, and maybe they don't feel like they're getting hosed as much in a potential deal. But Trey, do you make, you think there's any smoke to this little fire here?
Well, like you're saying, it makes sense if the Timberwolves are willing to include D'Angelo Russell. And that's the only way it could make any sort of sense to me, because you're clearing a way for Simmons to handle the ball a little bit, though I imagine Edwards will kind of be the number one guy going forward on that team. But you got to give up something to get something. Ben Simmons is still a good player. He's still an all-star caliber player, an all-NBA guy, or an all-defensive guy. Sometimes all NBA. It can happen. But if they're trying to get Ben Simmons for Ricky Rubio and Malik Beasley, it ain't gonna happen. You know, the Sixers are gonna want a lot back, and maybe that's why the Timberwolves are sliding in here, trying to be the first to the market, saying, here's some things we would be interested in. And then, you know, the Sixers can play that offer off other teams as well. And then maybe, you know, I don't think from this piece that Krasinski and LaRue had, it didn't seem to me that the Timberwolves are quite as worried about Karl Anthony Towns' relationship with D'Angelo Russell, which, you know, was a big part of the reason that they brought him in the first place. They're saying that's not going to factor into their decision, which means that, to me, it seems even if they're not willing to throw Russell in the deal right now, they will be in the future. And if that's the case, then maybe something could happen with these teams.
Yeah, again, I sort of thought it was more likely Russell, Beasley, a pick for Simmons and George Hill. Maybe there's something to that task. But anything to add to this headline from Real GM and the report from the guys at The Athletic?
I don't think the Wolves have enough to offer. We watched last year when Ricky Rubio was traded for Chris Paul, but he was traded to an OKC team that was obviously tanking. And so Ricky Rubio, as part of this package, I don't think the Suns are... They're not doing that. I mean, Ben Simmons is at a different point of his career than Chris Paul. He's just far, far younger. He demands a lot more in trade value back. Now, I watched the Minnesota Timberwolves a billion times this season. I'm going to keep using that word billion. But I loved watching Anthony Edwards this season, and you see a lot of potential around him. And so I'm not sure Daryl Morey looks at the Minnesota Timberwolves roster with all these J guys, because they have a billion J names on their roster, and he sees Jared Culver or Josh Cozy or Jaden McDaniels or Jalen Noel or Jordan McLaughlin or Jared Vanderbilt, who they can't trade right now, or Juan Hernan Gomez.
Whoa, nice.
Oh, that's
nice
a Kirby.
One. Nice one. Nice.
And I skipped over Jake Layman because I don't think he's necessarily a big part of this deal. But there's so many. There's a lot of potential there in those guys. And Malik Beasley can shoot the ball, but what's your main part that's coming back from the Minnesota Timberwolves? Are you
Rubio's
banking on
contract,
D'Angelo Russell?
Maybe.
Yeah, well, yeah. They want to win.
Beasley is some scoring.
Yeah, Beasley can shoot.
Beasley's
he can score.
Yeah.
He's a really he can fill it up, no doubt. But what are we doing here? I mean, they're trying to win a championship around Joel Embiid, and you know you can't put it off for several years. You can't. I just don't see it happening. There's potential there, but I don't know. I wouldn't be banking on Russell or Rubio or Beasley to bring home. I understand that Simmons was quote unquote afraid to shoot. He didn't want to shoot at the end of the games, and with these guys, you will have shooters. But you know, Simmons is still a really, really good player. So I don't think they're selling low, I should say. You know, kind of like OKC was able to do with Chris Paul, because they were just looking for picks. I mean, it's a different time and point for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Well, I'll tell you, it makes a lot of sense to put Ben Simmons on a team surrounded by guys with J's.
Nice one.
Let's take one more break, but we got a great tweet of the night, so don't go anywhere. What do you got, Tassie?
Danielle has taken up painting. Oil painting, acrylic painting, other painting. I don't know what it is, but it's just incredible. If I can convince her to open up a Shopify store, I know she'll be hearing the... Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. from the launcher online shop stage, yeah, just do it, to the first real life store stage, see, you made a sale, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage? How about that? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap, offering outdoor outfits, or paintings, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From the all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Here's some information. Just like entrepreneur David Scott Martin of Antique Candle did for No Dunks on Shopify. How about that? And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/nodunks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/nodunks now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/nodunks.
It's time for Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
Sometimes you don't need to overthink a Tweet of the Night. This one comes from at Isaac K. Lee. He tweeted, how Bucks fans should count while Giannis is at the free throw line, and he had a video attached to this tweet. JD, roll it. One, you're like a dream come true. Just wanna be with you. Girl, it's plain to see that you're the only one for me. Yeah, that's right. Isaac giving us a little Brian McKnight here on Twitter last night. Just gotta slow it down, Tass. I know you love some Brian McKnight.
Oh, you better believe I do, Skeets.
If they did this, it would be so funny if they just played this in the arena while he's at the line. That's how you count slow.
Why the heck not? Yeah. He'll be appearing in Mableton, Georgia soon.
Got your tickets?
Brian McKnight, yeah. Yeah, he comes down every year, so yeah. That or, as our man Josiah Johnson has been tweeting, Soidiet on Instagram. He's the counting guy.
Yeah.
He loves counting.
How fast that guy though, the singing counting guy, no?
1, 2, 3. Yeah. It's not for the Bucks fans. But
no, they can play it in Phoenix. But that's great. Shout out to Isaac K. Lee. I looked this up, Lee, too. I got a little time this morning. Let me look up some Brian McKnight facts.
You should have looked up a pair of pants for Tripe on the sample.
Yeah, I guess so. Brian McKnight, 16 Grammy Awards nominations.
Wow.
Never won one. Never won a Grammy, Brian McKnight. Mm. Apparently he's like third all time in the number of Grammy Award nominations without winning one. Snoop Dogg is on that list too, and then some other guy I've never even heard of. Yeah,
yeah, well, the D-O-double-G, yeah, I understand him, you know. Brian McKnight, like I'm gonna show a little bit of ignorance here, but is he from a band? Or has he always been a solo artist?
God damn you! No, it's the most disrespectful thing I've ever said.
How dare you say that?
Voice like that.
Well, that's the thing. I heard his voice there, and I'm like, he sounds like. Remember Shy? I think there was a band called Shy from the early '90s. Like, if I ever fall in love, I thought maybe he's from that.
No, he's solo. If you count a piano as a band member, then he's been or a guitar. He pretends to play guitar. No, he can play guitar.
Rocking the turtleneck in that clip, too. It's a beautiful look.
Yeah, keeping it cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, great tweet, Isaac. Congrats on Tweet of the Night. And let's get Brian McKnight a Grammy, okay?
I can't believe he didn't win a Grammy for that one song he released, Let Me Show You How Your Free Throw Works. A banger. A different side of Brian McKnight on that one.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot he did that.
Show me how that Grammy works.
Let's call it there. It's getting zany. Back tomorrow, though. No game on tonight. Hey, but we can watch some guys sock some dingers.
Oh.
I think it's the home run derby tonight, is it not? Yeah, I think that's on tonight. You got the MLB All-Star game on Tuesday. But we'll be back tomorrow morning, live at 10 a.m. Eastern, here on YouTube, to hit the beach and read your emails and your tweets. So send your questions in. You still got a little bit of time. NoDunks@TheAthletic.com. You can tweet them in at NoDunksInc or leave them below this video in the YouTube comments. And we're back at 10. That'll be a lot of fun. And then we'll have something in store to get us excited for Wednesday night's game on Wednesday. You got No Dunks all week long. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, I'm ending this show with a meme. And it's a bonus for you YouTube viewers out there, because I loved this play from Giannis Antetokounmpo where he went over Mikal Bridges. So I'm going to show you a play, and then I'm going to play you a meme, as some people call it. Here we go.
For that little push shot.
Antetokounmpo looking to go one-on-one. Oh, drives past Bridges. What a beautiful Euro step.
From I Think You Should Leave. Too small. Yeah, they're back this week, so it works out. I mean, you know, wasn't this...
Ah, there he is.
Brace the day, people.